burden to eternity with her. Those mean girls who got the house and the bulk of my father's life savings and insurance can choke on it. I've learned a few things about money, Mr. Justice. It can turn sour in your mouth.
You should think about your future, nonetheless.
And challenge a will? Oh, wouldn't the news people love that? No. If there's $1,000 left, I'll pay you. Otherwise, the idea of going after my father's money just holds no appeal at all. I know, you'd think I'd be more pragmatic, but I watched what that whole thirst for money can do to a person. I'm cleaning toilets for a living, Mr. Justice. I have a boyfriend who's a schoolteacher, a wonderful schoolteacher. I feel richer now than I did when I was married to Richard. I don't need anything more. I'm good. He was speechless for a moment. His hands were folded primly on his desk, and he looked at her earnestly.
Emma,
he said,
it's more than $1,000.
Well, how lucky for me, she said with a laugh. And here I thought Christmas was over. How much, then?
This would be half. What you were due at age 30, with another payment due quite soon when you're 35. Before even doing an audit, to see if there's more buried in there, it's $463,072.
Emma's mouth hung open, and she stared at him in shock. Then her eyes rolled back in her head, and she fainted, falling off the chair and hitting the floor with a thud. Sitting at his desk, Logan felt frustrated by his failed attempts to get Riley alone at all over the holidays. First came family, he understood that. And she'd explain that people didn't cancel housekeeping services, unless, of course, they were out of town, and the office cleaning arm of the business stayed steady. And then there was her ex's car accident. They might never have married, but there was no disputing he was the ex. And although Riley insisted it was for Maddie's peace of mind and not hers, she was spending an awful lot of time with the guy. But now the holidays were past. Maddie was back in school, and the ex was cleared to go back to work. Everyone could get on a normal schedule, and by the end of next month, he and George would be closing out the surveillance on Emma Shea. 6 months of watching and listening. No one had talked about money. The banking was tight as a drum. Emma was still cleaning houses, and all seemed right with the world. It was possible the federal judge could extend the warrant, but it wouldn't be based on anything George and Logan had discovered. No calls to Aruba, no suspicious dialogue, no funny money.
Good news, Georgiana said.
We caught a break. She's moving money.
Huh?
He asked, dumbfounded.
Large sums, too.
We got a wire transfer for almost $500,000.
No shit,
he said, stunned.
We know where it came from yet?
We'll know soon. We just have to exercise the warrant. And I think we notify the feds and offer to open an investigation.
We can notify the feds and let them open an investigation,
he suggested. It's our investigation, she reminded him.
It doesn't have to be.
Is this you making the easy choice? She asked. You skipping out so you don't mess things up with the girl?
Should we pull you out of this investigation for conflict of interest? There's nothing to indicate Riley had anything to do with Emma Shea's financial situation.
George sighed, took a deep breath. Emma's tied into the Kerrigan family in a big way. A bigger way than I think you realize. She works for Riley Kerrigan, she's sleeping with Adam Kerrigan, she's socializing with June Kerrigan, and the other guy? Your girl's ex? That was her boyfriend in high school, and they've rekindled their friendship. She's referred to him in conversations with Adam. And there's another twist that makes me uncomfortable and suspicious. Emma Shea is having serious dialogue with a teenage girl she calls Bethany. And I'm asking myself if that could be Maddie Kerrigan with an alias or a close friend of Maddie's. Emma and the girl are close. They seem bonded over something, and I'm not sure what. The girl complains about her stepmother sometimes, and Emma commiserates. Is it possible that it's Emma's child, given up for adoption? Could that be her motive for hiding money? A child?
What?
Just a thought. A guess, really. Quite a coincidence that Maddie Kerrigan is 15 and this Bethany, whoever she might be, is 15 and troubled. That aside, just with the money transfer, we have enough probable cause. We'll get the okay. We'll get a little more traction on this, then bring her in for questioning. He winced. There's a reason we don't get involved with our suspects.
Riley isn't a suspect.
She's a person of interest with a close relationship to our suspect. Logan knew this wasn't going to bode well for their relationship. Riley wasn't dumb. She was going to have no trouble connecting the dots. He didn't simply come upon her in the deli section. Innocent of agenda or intention. He knew Emma had some connection to the Kerrigans and stumbled across Riley, and then, damn, she was just the kind of woman he wanted. Somehow, he thought he could get the skinny on Emma without damaging his budding relationship with Riley. This is why we don't shit where we eat, George told him. He knew why. He just didn't want it to be true this time. It was the second week in January by the time Riley finally got around to having lunch with Logan. She invited him. They met at a small, quiet restaurant on a Sunday. Riley was already having a glass of wine when he arrived. He smiled a little sadly as he sat down at her table.
This is a little obvious, he said.
What do you mean?
I'm in a barely populated restaurant at a somewhat isolated table on a Sunday, so you can give me some bad news.
She sighed heavily. Come on, she said. Let's have a glass of wine. Let's talk. Let's have lunch.
I'll join you for the wine, but I reserve judgment on the lunch.
The waiter was there immediately, taking his order.
You don't have to wait for the wine. Go ahead. Lay it on me.
What exactly do you think is going to happen here? She asked.
I think you're going to break up with me.
First of all, I hadn't considered us steadies, Riley said. And second, I know I've been hard to reach the past couple of weeks, since Maddie's accident, but that's exactly the sort of thing I hate about dating. Just because we have a few nice dates and fun conversations, you have this expectation of some priority when I have a daughter, a business,
and an elderly mother,
he asked.
Don't spoil it, Riley. Men are clumsy assholes who just don't call when it doesn't work out the way they wanted. Women are completely different. They feel the need to be honest, to explain, to iron out all the details and make sure everything is smooth. Fixed.
His wine was delivered and he took a sip. Then he tapped her glass.
Do it. Do what you came here to do.
Wow. You make it seem horrible. I think from now on, I'm going with the not calling route.
Nah, this is classier. I'm ready to hear it. I think I know, but I'm ready to hear.
What do you think you know?
He shook his head. No way. It's your show.
I'm sorry. I'm going to be putting our dating adventure on hold. Maybe for a while, maybe forever. Time will tell. It seems I have some old issues to sort through. Some baggage. I'm as surprised as you are.
The ex,
he said. You shouldn't really call him that. He's Maddie's father.
And the accident made you realize how much you care about him,
Logan said.
It was not a question.
Not exactly, but close. We all spent Christmas dinner at my mother's, which is pretty typical, unless Jock could convince me to let him take Maddie's to his mother's house. And afterward, I dropped by his house to talk about Maddie. Nothing urgent, just the fact that we're moving into a new phase in this co-parenting. She's growing up and will be visiting colleges next year. I realized I had never seen the inside of his house. I didn't know Maddie had a perfectly lovely room there that she hardly ever uses. I was a little shocked to realize how difficult and distant I'd been where Maddie and Jock are concerned, and, well, the next thing you know, there's an accident, and he's seriously injured.
And you realized you nearly lost your chance.
She shook her head. No, it was Maddie. She verged on hysterical. She was so shaken and terrified. Her father means a lot more to her than I realized. How could I have been so dumb? So I'm trying to help out a little. Visiting him in the hospital, with Maddie, of course. Taking him some meals while he's recovering. And most of all, just talking to him.
Logan looked down.
My daughter is almost 16 years old, Logan. And I've spent the last 16 years being mad at Jock for being the idiot to screw up everything. More than once. And he's the first to admit he made some incredibly immature mistakes. I've been very pig-headed. I thought maybe it's time to know the guy now that he's grown up. I don't have any expectations. You'd think if we were meant to be a couple, it would have happened long before now. But I want to explore the idea of us being friends, if you can understand that. One day we'll be grandparents to the same grandchildren.
And we can't date while you're working on getting along with your ex for the sake of the grandchildren?
He asked.
You're not fooling me, Riley. You want to be open to something more than friendship. Deny it. Go ahead. Because I already know you don't lie.
Then you also know I don't move very fast, she said. And you're moving a little fast.
I don't have 15 years.
I certainly wouldn't suggest you wait that long for someone like me, she said. Will you still have lunch with me?
Why? Is there more?
He asked. Please, Logan. I like you. I like you very much. I think our timing is a bit off, and I'm being completely honest when I say that I'm not sure where this thing with Jock is headed. Is it possible you and I can remain friends?
Let's order lunch,
he said,
opening his menu.
Yes, let's, she said, opening her menu.
They made their choices, ordered, and she said,
Thank you.
Don't thank me yet,
he said.
We're going to have lunch, and then I'm going to tell you I don't really want to be friends. I was falling in love with you, and I think you know it. And I also think maybe you're afraid of that. I was willing to wait, to put up with being third or fourth on your list. I was willing to take chances for you. So we're going to have lunch, talk a little, then say goodbye. And if you're ever ready to pick this up where we left it, which was pretty close to the next level in the man-woman equation, you have my number. But I'm not waiting around while you check out your ex.
I don't think you understand at all, she said.
Oh, yeah, he said. I understand. You might intend to just get to know him so you can be grandparents together, but I guarantee you that's not how he's going to see it.
How do you know that?
I'm a guy, Riley. That's how I know.
It turned out that John Shea was the millionaire next door. An unpretentious, hard-working man of sensible but excellent taste. He and his first wife built themselves a solid house in a good neighborhood, and he saved and invested all his life. Emma didn't come along until he was 35. And he lost his wife to diabetes-related kidney failure a year later. He had accrued a nice little nest egg by the time he died, and insurance paid off the house, which was valued at $1.25 million.
John bought good cars and drove them until they died of old age, did all his own yard work, and could have indulged in European vacations or maybe had a summer home, but instead he saved and invested. His second wife had worked. His children were always well-dressed, and he insisted on a good mattress. They never scrimped on food. They ate good, healthy meals. Emma would have expected her father to have left a reasonable sum that was meant to cover his retirement, but
She was completely unprepared for the estate to be worth several million dollars.
It was obvious that Rosemary did what she always had done where Emma was concerned. She took what was Emma's and gave it to Anna and Lauren, two young women who had inherited their mother's anger and bitterness. For a little while, Emma was sad that those two had her father's house. But then she thought about the two of them living there together in old age, and her sadness turned to pity. She had no idea if either of them had a significant relationship or love in their lives, but they seemed far too unhappy for that. But then Rosemary was a stiff and negative woman, and she'd been married three times. Emma gave Aaron her banking information, and he arranged to have the money she was entitled to transferred into her bank account. She wasn't sure what she was going to do with it yet. After her experience with Richard, she wasn't eager to turn it over to a broker or money manager, so she thought maybe she'd study a little about investments herself. Do something that felt safe. She was her father's daughter, after all. Rosemary died, and Emma paid her respects. Adam was her escort. She went only to the visitation and had a very large floral arrangement delivered. There weren't many people present. Mostly friends of Anna and Lauren's, and Emma didn't stay long. She told no one about the money, not even Adam. When he noticed she was a little melancholy, she made the excuse that the final goodbye to Rosemary and probably her sisters had left her feeling a little let down. But it was the money. It bothered her, worried her. She decided she had to get that offer back and planned to explain to Adam that she'd been blown away by an uncomfortably large sum. She asked if she could cook dinner for him at his house on a Friday night. It was the end of January, and he was thrilled by the offer. She wasn't much of a cook, so little practice over the years, so she made an extra large pot of spaghetti and meatballs, bought prepared garlic bread that only needed a few minutes in the oven, and threw together a simple salad.
"Perfect,"
Adam said. "I made a big batch so we can have fried spaghetti tomorrow night, if I'm invited back."
"I want to be with you every night you'll have me,"
he said. "Adam, I have something to tell you. I've been keeping something from you. Just for a couple of weeks, but I have to tell someone, and you're the only one that really matters."
"I thought something was wrong," he said.
"I've been worried."
She explained about the will. She didn't tell him how much she'd received, but she said it was substantial.
"Emma, that's fantastic.
But how in the world did Rosemary think she'd hide it from you?"
"I'm not sure, except that she managed the trust. The lawyer, who was my father's friend, said there was more. Especially a third of the value of the house, if I wanted to fight for it. Adam, I put the money in the bank, and I hope I don't regret it, but I asked Aaron not to pursue this any further. There's another check due when I'm 35, and I'll put that in the bank. My sisters, my lonely, angry, heartbroken sisters might be very rich, but I won't challenge the management of the trust. I'm done. Just having more than $10,000 in the bank makes me uncomfortable." He laughed.
"Something for you to talk to Lucinda about,"
he said.
"But you have a little savings, Emma. The sky isn't falling anymore."
"Why does having anything make me feel bad? Guilty?"
"And why does that surprise you after what Richard did? Listen, if you can't beat the guilt, even with therapy, you can always give it all to charity."
"Would you?"
"Oh, hell no," he said with a grin. "I've been working my whole life for a savings account. I'm 37, have an IRA, a little money socked away, a school teacher's pension, and my mortgage will be paid off in 10 years because I always throw a little extra at the principal. Mom is taken care of. Riley's very successful. Maddie's college tuition is in the bank. We're in great shape. If someone dumped a bunch of money in my lap, I wouldn't feel guilt unless it was stolen."
"But I bet you'd use it to help people," she said.
"Emma, I help people every day. My mom helps people and animals. Riley thinks she's just working herself to death, but look at what she's built and how it caters to the single mothers she employs. For most people, helping people is either a way of life or it's not. And she thought, he is so right. I'll just be still and quiet for a little while, and I'll know exactly how to make my father's legacy help people.
One of the best ways to help the world is to never be a burden to it. Give money, give time, give love, and make sure you give yourself a little to spare so you're not the one in need.
You are so wise, she said.
Poor boys work harder to be wise,
he said.
I'm very grateful not to be a poor boy anymore. And I'm really grateful for this spaghetti. And to know you have no real reason to be sad.
They talked late into the night. They kicked back and forth many ideas of what it meant to really live well, to live in the moment, to be present and aware, and to be grateful. What was plenty, really? Emma had been up and down the financial spectrum so many times, she should know. She'd been one of the well-off girls in school, struggled in college, and almost didn't have enough money to join a sorority. Her first years in New York were awfully tight, but also filled with light creatures and great fun. Then there were the years with Richard, during which she often felt like a visitor in her own life. And here she was, in the arms of a good, honest man, and everything seemed so real to her, so rich. In the morning, she began to stir when she heard him moving around. He got up, started the coffee, got in the shower. When she heard the shower shut off, she went to the kitchen for coffee, and the second her feet hit the floor, she felt strange. Her stomach was upset. Her knees were a little weak. She got to the kitchen and was overtaken by instant and powerful nausea, and she dashed for the sink to be sick. She retched and choked. Not that there was much there. She felt Adam come up behind her, take hold of her hair, and gently rub her back. She ran the water, rinsed her mouth, reached for a paper towel, and slowly, shakily turned to face him. He lifted one brow.
That spaghetti worked fine for me, he said.
I have no idea what's wrong, she said. She sniffed. I feel completely fine now. That coffee even smells good.
Emma?
He asked.
When did you last have a period?
Oh, shit, she said. It was next to impossible to get an immediate appointment with an OB, especially if you were a woman about 4 weeks pregnant. What they routinely did was give you vitamins and see you for the first time in a couple of months, maybe 3 months. But Adam talked with a man whose wife was an OB and called in a favor because Emma was worried. She was afraid she'd gotten a positive pregnancy test because something was terribly wrong. After all, she'd been through a little over a year of infertility tests and treatments.
I can't see that anything is wrong, Dr. Winnett said. And you are definitely pregnant. Due in the fall.
But I was told my only hope was in vitro.
I'll request the records from your specialist and do a little blood work, but if you were infertile, you're not anymore. And you appear to be in excellent health.
Her records were electronic and therefore transferred from Dr. Grimaldi in New York within a couple of days. Dr. Winnett called her.
I'm a little confused. You say he did a fertility workup? Because all I find in your chart is regular exams, birth control medication, one cyst removal.
No, not birth control pills. I was taking hormones to stimulate ovulation. I was x-rayed for blocked fallopian tubes. We were getting ready to harvest eggs for in vitro when...
She stopped.
She remembered when Richard said, I don't have time to deal with this while I'm consumed with the investigation. They're demanding records constantly. Just let me get through this and we'll give it a go.
Maybe I can find better records at the hospital or surgical center where the procedures were performed.
Emma took a deep breath and tried to think clearly. It couldn't be that it had all been a lie.
Dr. Grimaldi had his own surgery center, and she had gone with Richard after hours because of Richard's impossible schedule.
I'll call them, ask if they have records for your procedures.
But there were none.
Could the records have been lost? Emma asked.
Possible, but unlikely, Dr. Winnett said. It has happened, though it's rare. But all that aside, your blood work is good, your physical was excellent, and you have no reason to worry.
Emma would never know for sure, but she strongly suspected she'd been pulled into the web of Richard's many lies yet again. When she first suggested a baby, he didn't like the idea because of his age. When she pestered him, he made an appointment with Dr. Grimaldi. Early evening, when there was only one nurse present and no other patients. Emma had felt, as she often did, that she was given special treatment because of Richard. She was flattered to be seen by such an important doctor after the office was closed. Dr. Grimaldi had seemed thrilled to help Richard with this little problem. And now she thought Dr. Grimaldi had probably been very well paid for his fraud.
I'd bet my life on it, Emma told Adam. He pulled off things I never could have dreamed of.
Well, the only thing I want to pull off with you is a child. I didn't think I'd ever be a father.
You don't have much choice now, do you? She said.
You're going to have to come clean with Riley,
he said.
We can do it together. You can do it your own way. You can enlist June to help, but it has to be done. Like it or not, we're all family now.
I'm sorry for the surprise, for the shock, Emma said.
I'm not,
he said.
I wasn't sure how I'd ever convince you to give me a chance. I couldn't be happier about it. And all I want to do is make you happy. Think you can live with that?
She smiled and touched his sweet face. I'm sure I can. Chapter 20 Maddie had a date for the Valentine's dance. It was her first official date, the kind where a boy formally asks a girl for a special occasion, when a perfect dress has to be found. But there were three sophomore couples going together, not a 16-year-old among them. Thank God. So they were chauffeured by parents, and Jock came over to Riley's house to see Maddie all dressed up and picked up by her date. He didn't act like one of those caricature dads who growled and threatened the skinny young man, and Riley was so proud of him for that. He was completely comfortable, complimenting Maddie, grinning at the kids, taking a few pictures, and texting them to his side of the family. And when they were gone, off to the dance, Riley opened a bottle of wine and poured them each a glass. She clinked his glass in a toast. "That's gonna be hard to get used to, watching her go off with a man like that."
"That wasn't a man," he said.
He pulled her down on the couch beside him.
"She's going to figure us out real soon, you know."
"I think she has no idea it's you I've been talking to at night."
"It's probably none of my business, but what happened to the other guy?"
"We parted on friendly terms," Riley said. "I invited him to lunch, told him that many circumstances combined to make me realize I wanted to get to know my daughter's father better. He was pretty civil about it."
"Pretty civil?"
Jock asked. "He's a very nice guy, and I suggested we stay in touch, remain friends, and he said no, thank you."
"Smart man,"
Jock said. "What are we gonna do if we don't work out?" Riley asked.
"You mean if it doesn't work for you? It's working pretty well for me."
"I don't want Maddie traumatized," Riley said. "You know she'll be thrilled to think of her parents romantically involved. What if we hit a wall, fight, split apart again? What if that happens?" He smiled and just shook his head.
"Couples argue sometimes. People disagree."
He put his arm around her and pulled her closer.
"It's okay if that happens. But those things that kept us apart as teenagers, we don't have those things to wrestle with anymore.
At least I don't. I'm not scared and immature anymore. And you and Maddie are my family. You think I won't do anything under the sun to protect that?
How long have you been like this? She asked him.
I don't know. Look, I'm not the smart one, but my mother says I have good common sense.
There hasn't been anyone for me, she said. No one. He chuckled.
I wish I could say the same, but I made a few women completely miserable looking for someone to love.
Is it positively ridiculous that we've loved each other for all these years and we couldn't get together on anything?
I think Emma has something to do with it.
Emma?
Riley, you've been hung up on Emma for 16 years. Feeling guilty, angry, lonely. You blamed yourself for so much. You blamed her when you couldn't blame yourself anymore. Then she came back, wounded after all she went through, and you saw that she was just a hurt little girl willing to do whatever she had to get her life back. Just like you had been. The two people who had failed you in the worst time you'd ever faced, me and Emma, are back, hoping for another chance to be there for you.
I get that you are, but Emma?
Emma. Working for your company, following your rules, staying away so she doesn't crowd you, visiting your mother in secret so she doesn't anger you. Just coming back, she reminded you that all our mistakes were so, so long ago. And some of them turned out to be real gifts. She wants to be your friend again, Riley. And I want to be your man.
After all this time, she said.
I couldn't get close to you before now,
he said.
It wasn't your fault. I don't blame you. I was such an asshole. But we have what it takes now.
Ever since you lost your spleen, I've been very satisfied.
Nice to be a little older, isn't it? The backseat of a car or a sandy beach sure can be a challenge. Maddie can't come home early without calling one of us for a ride. Let's go to bed and take our time, huh?
It amazed Riley that her old passionate feelings for Jock when she was so young could feel just as fresh and new now, but vastly improved. Now she couldn't help but be aware that his every touch was meant simply to please her. They had only renewed this part of their relationship about a week before, and already they were like seasoned lovers, like old pros. He worked her body like he'd been doing it for years. The Jock she'd been so angry with had been replaced by a tender and unselfish man. The Jock she always thought of as an idiot was actually a very funny, intuitive man. And the man who had been such a giving father to their daughter proved he could be trusted. She curled up to him and whispered, "I think you are a wonderful lover."
"Or you are, and it makes me look good," he said, kissing her.
Pressed up against his warm body, she drifted back in time for a while. They didn't have the tools to make it when they were kids, nor the wisdom and patience. But they had those things now. It seemed that only seconds had passed when the sound of the front door opening woke them. Riley looked over Jock's shoulder at the clock. It was midnight. "Oh, God, what are we gonna do?"
"Mom?" Maddie yelled.
"I think we're coming out of the closet," Jock said. "Unless you have a better idea."
"Mom, you went to bed? I thought you'd wait up to hear about the—"
She stood in the doorway. Her mouth hung open. Her eyes were big and round.
"Dad?" she asked, confused. "What are you doing?"
Well, we couldn't find the Scrabble game.
Late Sunday morning, Riley went to Emma's little bungalow. She knew the address from her employment records, and she wasn't going to do what she had to do at work. She immediately thought it was so cute, sitting on a street with a lot of little houses, big trees, and old people. Not a child in sight. She parked on the street and recognized her brother's SUV in front of the house.
That should make things easy. Sort of. She tapped on the door and Emma opened it wearing jeans and a sweatshirt, her hair pulled back in a ponytail. She jumped in surprise when she saw Riley.
Sorry for the shock, Riley said. Sorry I didn't call ahead. I didn't want you worrying about what I wanted. I didn't want you to waste a lot of energy trying to prepare yourself. Can we talk?
Adam's here, Emma said almost shyly.
I saw his car.
Then there he was, right behind Emma, his hand on Emma's shoulder, and he was frowning. Riley?
I just wanted to talk to Emma for a moment. And you also, okay?
Sure, Emma said.
Of course.
I just fixed a cup of tea. Would you like one?
That would be nice, if you're sure it's all right.
Come inside, Riley, she said, holding the door open.
I'll get that tea, Adam said.
Riley looked around the pleasant little room and smiled. It was very understated, comfortable, and homey.
You must really like it here, she said to Emma.
But what a difference for you.
A very positive difference.
Riley, I wasn't intentionally keeping my relationship with Adam a secret. It felt as if, well, as if you really didn't want to know.
One of the many things I probably should work on. That control thing. Emma, we've worked well together.
Despite the fact that I can't seem to follow the rules.
I'm not here about that. A long, long time ago, I did you wrong. And I'm sorry. I wasn't just being a terrible girlfriend and untrustworthy friend. There was a bit more to it. I fell for Jock. I don't blame you at all for being furious, for ending our friendship. It's what I would have done.
It was a long time ago, Emma said. My feelings were hurt and I was angry, but if I'm honest, I have to admit, I'd already moved on from Jock. I think I kept up the grudge for so long because I'd lost you. Adam handed Riley a cup of tea, but she put it on the small sofa table in front of her.
I think we were all collateral damage. Jock and Adam and Mom, too. A couple of girlfriends, friends for life, fell out over a guy, and there were dead bodies everywhere. I'm here to tell you again. I'm sorry for what I did to you. And I'd like another chance.
Of course, Emma said. Why now?
Because Jock and I are back together. After 16 difficult years.
Emma actually stood up from her chair.
Really?
Then she slowly sat.
Really? Jock's always been a good father to Maddie, when I'd let him. And when he was in the accident and I saw how terrified Maddie was, I decided I'd waited way too long to have a closer look, to make an effort with Jock. He loves Maddie so much. He's not the same kid who messed up our friendship, Emma. He's a good man. And I find I still care about him.
Oh, that's so sweet, Emma said.
What could be better?
Yes, of course we should give ourselves another chance. But don't worry. I will remember you're my employer when we're at work.
I'm not worried about that. I have a feeling you won't work for me much longer. You have too much talent.
Riley took a breath.
So? You two are official?
She asked of Emma and Adam.
More than official, Adam said. We're pregnant.
Are you kidding me? Riley said. Does Mom know?
We have to take care of that, Adam said. Easier now that you know.
And you're getting married?
Riley asked.
We're still kind of in shock, but probably.
Riley got a little teary. She felt the emotion welling up inside her.
We should have worked on this a long time ago. Let go of the baggage and grudges.
There was suddenly a hard knocking at the door, and they all froze. There was something about it that signaled it was not an ordinary visitor. Certainly not Penny.
Adam opened the door and was met with two badges.
"We're looking for Emma Shea."
Riley stood. "Logan!"
"Riley,"
he said with a nod.
"Miss Shea, we've met. I'm Logan Danner. This is my partner, Georgiana Severs. We have some questions for you and would appreciate your cooperation." "What kind of questions?"
Adam demanded. "Yeah, what kind of questions?" Riley chimed in. "What are you doing here?"
"Just some questions, Miss Shea. We'd like you to come to the station to be interviewed."
"About?" Emma said.
"About the disposition of your late husband's estate."
"My late husband didn't have an estate," she said. "Am I under arrest?"
"At this point, it's just an investigation." "She's not going anywhere with you," Adam said.
"Wait a minute here," Riley said. "Is this a coincidence? You wanting to question Emma?"
"Miss Kerrigan, we don't have any reason to detain or question you," Georgiana said. "Miss Shea?"
"No, wait," Riley said. "Have you been investigating Emma?"
"Ask me whatever you like," Emma said. "Just make it quick. We'd like you to come to the office so that we can record and have a record of our interview."
"I wonder if my lawyer would approve of that idea."
"We're not filing any charges at this point. We're not going to be reading you your rights. If you just answer those questions, you can. We'd very much appreciate it. No one wants to arrest you."
"And this is in regards to," Emma persisted.
"Large sums of money appearing in your accounts, ma'am," Georgiana said.
"Ah," she said.
"So you've had a warrant, the only way you could legally watch my account."
"I see."
"I'll drive myself to your office and I'll answer your questions, with my lawyer present." "No, Emma," Adam said, taking her elbow in a soft grip. "I don't want you to do this. There's no reason."
"Yes, let's get this over with," she said. She looked at Logan.
"Is the warrant for banking records?"
He nodded.
"And what else? Have you been in my house?"
Logan shook his head.
"What else is your warrant for?" she asked.
"Banking and phone."
"Let's do this, Ms. Shea. You're eventually going to have to answer our questions. We don't want to ask for an arrest warrant."
"And I don't want you to," she said.
"I'll call my lawyer and drive myself over. I'm not going to take off."
She grabbed her purse and jacket.
"This must be exciting for you," she said. "It's Sunday morning."
"And you knew exactly where to find her," Riley said.
"They've always known, Riley," Emma said. "They've been watching me. They want to know if I have some secret hidden money for my husband. They're going to watch me forever, and they're not going to find anything because there isn't anything." She looked at Logan and Georgiana.
"Let's get this over with."
"I'm going with you,"
Adam said, grabbing his jacket.
"I'm going too," Riley said.
3 hours later, Emma and Aaron emerged from the interview room to find Adam and Riley waiting. By quick consensus, they decided to go to a nearby Mexican restaurant to talk and order something to eat and drink. Aaron excused himself from the group. Riley beat them inside and secured a booth. The waitress was beside them right away.
"I think we're going to need 3 wines. Any preference?" Riley asked.
"I'm having tea," Emma said. "Just any hot tea, please. Milk and sugar."
"I'll have hers. Chardonnay,"
Riley said.
"I'll have a beer, whatever's on tap. And how about some nachos?"
Adam asked.
When they were alone again, Riley was the first to speak up.
"I think that bastard dated me because he was watching you."
"They were very nice," Emma said. "Tiresome, but polite enough. I was warned this might happen. When we settled up in New York, the lawyers told me there would be victims and law enforcement who would find it preposterous that I'd surrender everything, right down to my engagement ring. I didn't want anything that had come from Richard, but I did recently come into some money.
My father's estate, which Rosemary always claimed was hardly worth talking about, actually had something in it. Rosemary, God rest her soul, failed to let me know. She clearly meant for her daughters to have it. But my father's lawyer followed through, and some money came my way. He showed them a copy of the will, along with all the financial information. It's all completely legitimate.
Is this going to keep happening?
Riley wanted to know. Emma shrugged. Until there's nothing to notice, I suppose.
But you were already investigated and cleared, Riley said.
And I remain a curiosity to some. The best way to handle it is to be cooperative. Show them the quickest route to the information they want or need.
Emma, how have you stood this kind of treatment?
I found that if I just put myself in their shoes, I get it. And it's best to just be honest and forthcoming. I learned right away. Refusing to answer just intensifies the whole process. According to Logan, they'll make their report to the FBI Fraud Division, and it'll probably be over. Not to say it can't start up again in the future. Her tea was delivered along with the drinks for Riley and Adam. I've made peace with that. I understand why they want to be sure I'm not a part of his crimes.
You are a brave soul, Riley said, lifting her glass to Emma.
I still want to punch Logan, the bastard. Go easy, Riley. He has a job to do. And I'm just guessing, but I don't think he had to date you to do it. Then she smiled. Even so, the best news I've had lately is that after all this time, you and Jock will find a way.
Jock, Adam scoffed. What the hell kind of a name is that anyway?
You know he was named for his grandfather. Are you going to start being nice to him now?
He took a drink from his beer. I guess I'll have to.
Emma, do you need a day off to recover from Dragnet?
Riley asked.
Nah, I'll be fine.
Let me catch my breath, and then I think we should tell June she's going to be a grandmother again.
Despite the stressful police questioning, Emma was feeling euphoric. Her world was coming into focus, and she had so much to look forward to. She had Adam's perfect love, something she never for one second anticipated when she was making her way home to Sonoma. Riley had finally come around, and it looked as though they all might not just be friends, but family as well. June was so happy about the baby, she cried. Even Maddie and Jock were excited. She was anxious to tell Shauna and Deli, but there were a few details to work out before she went public. A date to get married and merge households would help. Adam, as protective as when they were kids, asked her to quit work, at least working that hard. His income was modest, but he'd been a teacher for a long time and he could support a family. She said no. She wanted to work. She spent more time with Riley, a little while after work most days. They had so much to catch up on. Will you be my maid of honor?
Emma asked her.
Yes, absolutely. And will you wear a mask while you clean so you don't inhale bleach? I don't want my nephew to have two heads.
So Emma carried a mask in her pocket and discreetly slipped it on when she was using bleach in the bathrooms. But Riley's concern gave her deep happiness. And then a text came from Bethany.
I'm sorry, Emma, but it's just too much. There's no laughter. There's just no love here. And I've had enough.
Emma was cleaning another house, but because it was Bethany, she read the text and responded immediately.
What's too much?
The girl had been mostly cheerful since Christmas. Emma had hoped her feelings of sadness and helplessness were starting to wane.
No reply.
If that had been Adam or Riley, she'd have waited until she was between houses, but she smelled an ill wind. Bethany, where are you? No reply. She tried calling, but it went directly to voicemail. She went to Deli. Deli had daughters, and there was something about teenage girls, even those not in crisis, that was so terrifying, so filled with drama. Deli, Bethany texted me this, she said, showing her the phone. I can't reach her.
She's just wanting some attention, probably.
What if she's not? She took a bunch of her stepmother's pills a year ago or so, and it just knocked her out for a while. But that's something to think about. What if this means she's given up? What if she's suicidal?
You don't even know where she is, Deli said. She might be on top of the Golden Gate Bridge.
I think I have to go to her house, Emma said.
We're not done here. I'll call Riley. I'll go check and come right back. I'll even stay late and help if we get behind. You're getting sucked right into this girl's drama, Deli said.
I guess so. But if anything is wrong and I don't check on her, I'll never forgive myself.
Oh, Lord, you're going to be the death of me. Shauna, she yelled. We gotta go check something and come right back.
You don't have to, Emma said.
Better we all stay together. That house ain't so far from here. Don't pack up. We'll be back here in half an hour.
Thank you, Emma said. While Shauna drove, grumbling about how this day was gonna get long, Emma called Riley. She had to leave a message. She called McKenna, and McKenna said, Do not do this. I'll call her parents, but you just stay out of it. When Emma disconnected, Deli wanted to know what McKenna said. She said, Go ahead and good luck. Then Emma swallowed hard. When they got to the house, Emma looked up and down the street. All the houses were separated by trees and shrubs, sitting back on huge lots. Running to the neighbors would take too much time. She took the keys and went to open the front door, but it wouldn't open. There was a security lock that could be used at night, locked from the inside. So she banged on the door and rang the bell. She pulled out her small notebook, looked at the key code for the garage, and punched in the numbers. The garage door slowly rose, and she ran inside, trying the door to the house. It was bolted as well. She was frozen. What if Bethany wasn't even in there? She called McKenna. Did you reach your parents? No, McKenna said with a sigh. I said it was important, but I haven't gotten a call back. Listen, I'm sorry, but I'm scared, Emma said. She's fragile. She's been talking to me, and she's... She has good days and bad days, but her mother died. Her stepmother moved right in, and... She's fragile. Oh, crap, you're involved. She needed someone. Emma, you are at least on probation. So Emma called the police. Once they established that there was no missing person, no cry for help, no family member seeking a welfare check, they said they'd send a patrol by when they could. She dialed another number. Logan Danner, he said in answer to her call. Logan, it's Emma. Listen, I have a situation. I've been talking to a 15-year-old girl from one of the houses I clean. She's troubled. She's maybe suicidal. I might be suicidal in her situation. Oh, it's complicated. It's...
Bethany Christensen?
He asked. How did you know? She asked.
I listened to your telephone conversations, he said. We were a little confused about that one, but it didn't seem to have anything to do with the transfer of funds.
I'm at her house. She left me a suspicious text. It's all too much, she said. She said she's had enough, and the doors are bolted from the inside.
Did you call the police?
They weren't impressed. I'm calling to tell you to get out your handcuffs because I've decided to break in. I really want to be wrong, but I'm going to break in.
Can you wait for me? I'm not far away.
I can't wait for you. I'm sorry, but I can't let anything terrible happen. Her parents aren't returning calls. No one cares about this girl. No one. She hung up the phone. I am clearly insane, Emma thought. I don't know that much about her, but I'm completely involved. Totally sympathetic. Terribly scared for her. There was a workbench in the garage that, like the rest of the Christensen home, was far too clean and tidy. She eyed a hammer, a big screwdriver, a crowbar. She took the crowbar and wedged it into the tight space right where the doorknob was and started prying with all her might. She was at it for a good 5 minutes when she heard a car pull into the drive. She looked over her shoulder. Shauna and Deli were standing in the driveway behind her, staring in wonder. Logan strode toward her.
Give me that, he said.
If we're gonna do it, let's do it.
Thank you, she said, rubbing her upper arm.
It took him 3 powerful tugs with the crowbar, some splintering wood, and a great big kick, and the door opened. Logan was inside first.
Bethany!
He shouted. Look through the downstairs, Emma said. I'll check the upstairs bedrooms. Their feet pounded through the house, each of them shouting the girl's name. Emma went immediately to Bethany's bedroom and found the room undisturbed, the bed made as usual. She checked her bathroom. It was spotless. She called out, checked the master bedroom. Again, everything in order. The master bath was clean as a whistle, and she thought, I've made a terrible mistake. Again. She heard a soft moan and opened the door to the large walk-in closet. And there, in a little pile on the floor, was Bethany, covered in blood.
Logan!
She screamed.
Up here! Help me!
She rolled Bethany to the side, and it seemed the blood was coming from her thin, pale wrists.
Oh, God! Bethany! No!
She put her fingers to Bethany's neck and felt a faint pulse.
In here!
She shouted again.
Is she alive?
He asked.
Yes, but unconscious, and her pulse is weak.
Before Emma even finished talking, Logan had grabbed a white shirt from a hanger, bit a tear in the hem, and ripped it into a couple of strips. He tossed one to Emma.
Pressure,
he said, ripping the shirt again and again.
Nice and tight.
When that was done, he got on his cell and called for paramedics. Over the next 15 minutes, the master bedroom began to fill with people. Emma and Logan stayed beside Bethany, Emma holding her gently, rocking her, telling her she must be all right. Must. First, Deli and Shauna were there, watching. Then McKenna, followed quickly by Riley. Both of them were stunned and angry that this poor girl could have suffered so much and there seemed to be no one to help her. Finally, paramedics arrived. And by that time, Bethany was moaning and whimpering weakly. After an IV was started and the gurney stood ready to take her to the ambulance, Olaf and Liz Christensen appeared. Liz gasped and covered her mouth, while Olaf rushed to his daughter. As the paramedics transferred Bethany, Olaf Christensen faced Emma.
Who are you? And how did you know my daughter was in trouble?
I clean your house, Mr. Christensen. And she reached out to me. I wanted her to reach out to you, but she didn't think you could handle it. She's been in a lot of pain since her mother passed away.
But I got her a counselor,
Liz Christensen said. Yes, and you also cleared out all the family pictures and started wearing her dead mother's clothes. How you thought that was going to be okay, I'll never know.
I asked, she said defensively.
Looking a bit confused.
I asked permission from Bethany.
And the pictures? I didn't think that was helping us become a family. Emma took out her phone and revealed the text. Bethany lost her family. She told me when her mother was alive, they laughed a lot. They hugged and laughed and fell asleep together. She told me your assistant bought her birthday and Christmas presents. She was so, so lonely. Olaf Christensen read the text.
God,
he said.
I just wasn't looking, was I? I don't know how to thank you for finding her. I don't know how you knew she would need you.
Well, I've looked the other way at times in my life when I shouldn't have. I won't ever do it again. Epilogue. June Kerrigan threw a nice party for her family and friends 2 days before Christmas. It was a buffet featuring her favorite dishes. Her house was decorated to such an extent it made her shudder to think about the taking down and putting away. She may have gone a little overboard, but this was a very special holiday to her. Emma Shea Kerrigan no longer cleaned houses for Riley. Now she was a full-time student and mother. John Shea Kerrigan was born in October,
A little early, but a good size. While Emma was supposed to be in a lecture at UC Davis, where she was studying toward a master's in counseling. Now, at his first Christmas, John was being passed around to every person present. Adam was married and a new father, something June had nearly lost hope for. Riley and Jock were married, too. Riley had just announced that Maddie would be getting a little brother or sister in the spring. Penny Pennington had been invited and had spent a lot of time in the kitchen with June and was busily monitoring the buffet table to make sure fresh hors d'oeuvres were always available. Ethan and Lyle were literally waiting in line for their shot at John. Aaron Justice had come, bringing a huge wreath with him. Beatrice, the particularly ugly rescue dog, had found her forever home with June, though she had not gotten very much prettier. And Bethany, Liz, and Olaf Christensen were there, together, laughing at all the old Kerrigan family stories. But the nicest thing, June saw Riley and Emma lifting their glasses in a secret toast, smiling. Emma had her favorite wine, and Riley had sparkling cider. They were friends again. They'd been each other's maid and matron of honor and would be raising their children together, after all. The End. This book was read for you by Therese Plummer, a member of SAG-AFTRA. This is Therese Plummer. We hope you've enjoyed this production of The Life She Wants by Robin Carr. Recorded Books offers a wide selection of bestsellers, mysteries, classics, histories, and more. So look for us at your public library or on download sites online. And thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.